Welcome to the It Feels Right podcast with Robin Stone. Sadly, no Stone this week, but we have an epic co-host, Mr. Abraham Deacon, Eric Roddy, joining us, and we're going to go over a lot of his background, how he found Pickle, some mutual connects that are just legends of the sport. We're going to go over some of the Miami Open recap, and
yeah, and then we're going to have an awesome up and down trending segment with some special guests here. So great episode today, and really fired up to be here.
Let's get after it.
Because you know why?
Why?
Because it feels right.
It feels right. Legendary.
Ladies and gents, before we hop into the show, I do want to talk to you a little bit about Selkirk's amazing line of pickleball nets. And whether you're just starting out or you're a seasoned pro, Selkirk has the perfect net for you. When you choose a Selkirk net, you're not just choosing any net, you're opting for the official net of the PPA Tour, where excellence meets professional play. With Selkirk's line of nets, you can play pickleball anywhere. Selkirk's range of nets caters to every player's needs, offering budget-friendly choices for casual enthusiasts and premium options for those with a competitive edge that are looking for more of the pro-level net. So either way, you're ensuring quality play for all levels, and I've got a Selkirk net for myself, and let me tell you, it's a game changer. It's all about playing on your terms wherever you are, whether it's the driveway or on the PPA Tour. So if you love pickleball as much as I do, and we do here at It Feels Right podcast, check out Selkirk's pickleball nets. Get the freedom to play anywhere and everywhere and elevate your game with the net trusted by the pros. Selkirk's got you covered. If you're interested in getting a net of your own, go to selkirk.com/collection/nets, and we'll link to that in the show notes. You can also find this link in the description of the show. But let's jump into this week's episode of It Feels Right with Robin Stone. Eric Roddy, welcome. New
Thanks
co-host.
Let's go.
Guest co-host, It Feels Right. Adam Stone could not make it this week, so you know we had to throw an audible. You know, audible just like Mike McDaniel does early in games, chasing points, which I know just by following your Twitter feed, he, you know, you have mixed feelings. Sometimes you're very happy with him, and then sometimes you're very upset. But, you know, you can't win them all. But thanks for co-hosting today. We're going to have yourself. We're going to have maybe a guest appearance from a couple of people coming up. So you have to hang in there to see what that's about. But yeah, dude, welcome.
Yeah. Feels right to be here. I'm excited to be on and been trying to do this for a while. So glad we can make it work.
Yeah. And, you know, I don't know if everybody knows, but you're known as Abraham Deacon. And there's there's Abraham Deacon. And then I think Greg Dow told me you also have Thomas Jefferspin, Dwight D. Eisenpower, and I think you're trying to put some labels on some people in your regular crew up in Charlotte, huh?
Yeah, Team Charlotte. This will be the first they hear about it. Obviously, when you could make your name on pickleballtournaments.com, everybody was some people were coming up with some stuff, so that's where Abraham Deacon came from. And yeah, Schick doesn't know it, but I want him to be Thomas Jefferspin. Sock can be Fight D. Eisenpower, and then Brooke Buckner can be Harriet Dubman. So we got the whole crew.
I just love it. Yeah, I remember. Yeah, back in the day, it'd be like 2020, 2021, and you'd just see the wildest names on pickleball tournaments because you could just literally write in anything. And yeah. I remember one of our mutual buddies, Drake Bernstein, we were playing a tournament down in Florida. Might have even been like a Moneyball or something, but or maybe like a Punta Gorda tournament. But there was somebody that put Craving Pho as their name. I don't know if you've seen that one before, but it's just Craving Pho.
I remember that.
And Drake and I always love that one.
So good. You Craving Pho, El Condor, I remember was one. You King of the Beach, out there. A lot of California guys. So Craving Pho is money.
What I wanna know, we'll get into a lot of things here, but mentioning Drake Bernstein, I know you guys are buddies. What's kind of the history there? And for those of the audience that don't know who Drake Bernstein is, let's get into that.
Yeah, so kind of there's these myths around sports, and I want to say, you know, you got Murat Safin at the U.S. Open 20 years ago. He didn't bring enough clothes because he didn't think he was going to make it far enough, and he ends up winning the tournament and has to go out and buy clothes. You know, you got these myths. a myth of pickleball is there's always going to be a what if surrounding if Drake Bernstein had pursued professional pickleball. He's the head women's coach now at the University of Georgia in his first year officially as kind of head women's coach of the tennis team there. So he actually taught me how to play pickleball when I was in Athens 2020 to 2022. I was getting my MBA full time. I volunteer assistant coached under him. And when I was there, we were playing pickleball, and he taught me very much the right way of how to play, and it's just a legend. And you'll remember too, having played with him a ton, how good this guy is. He's the kind of guy who will play and drill once or twice a year, and then if you had to ask me to pick anybody, he'd be in my top five to play a tournament with tomorrow, if not maybe even one. We played a money ball, Rob, you'll love this, in December of this past year, and one day of training and he was lights out. And I was playing the right by the end of the day. He was taking over. So this is a guy who's super good. He's also a great guy, killing it on the D1 coaching scene right now. But if not, I really think he'd be a top 10. It's not even crazy to say top five men's doubles player and mixed doubles player. So he's that good.
Yeah, I totally agree. And it's funny. It's like you guys play. I don't even know how I heard about it, but like there's like rumblings through, like it wasn't even online, but I remember somebody told somebody that you guys played a money ball, and I was like, oh, look at Drake getting back into the action a little bit. So that made me happy to hear that he was playing some. And yeah, to grow the legend a little bit more. I was talking to him a while back, and he was just like, yeah, you know, I was playing, played some singles games with Federico Staxrud, and you know, that guy's pretty good. But I think we play six games, and I won all of them. It's just like, Jesus.
I was there for that. Yeah,
that's pretty good.
Right after Fed had won his first Atlanta Open. So this is probably 2022, I think. And then we met Fed at a park, and he graciously agreed to play the next day. And again, Drake's just hitting passing shots left and right. So one other legend I got to call out, Rob, is, and you'll appreciate this, is Hendry Winarto. He's a Raleigh native now, and used to be down in Florida. This guy will do stuff with a pickleball paddle that should be illegal in all 50 states. I mean, he's waving his badminton hand in front of you.
Oh, scary. It's scary.
It's scary. The guy's a legend. I had to call him up.
Yeah, it's like this little shake. I was trying to describe this to somebody. He's like, there's got to be a – I was trying to describe this to Malin. I was like, this guy – he's based in Orlando. He's a badminton guy. I think he ran Clear One Sports in Orlando and then took a job at Raleigh. But he was he would do things with the pickleball paddle that legit scared me. I was like, if I was at the kitchen to kitchen with him and he's doing something like a little shake, and then the ball is already at your chest, and you're like, what just happened? What was that? But yeah, that guy, does he still play at all, or is he just not, it's just badminton?
Schick mentioned he went to go play badminton. Hendry graciously kind of taught Schick, and I think maybe been Anton Goods or somebody else in Raleigh. And they said they messed around a little bit with Pickle, but he's not playing like he used to. You think about how crazy it is too. He was doing that kind of stuff with the old paddles. Like imagine him with a new spinny paddle. I mean, it would be, you would literally be getting hit in the face probably two or three times a game.
No.
So, scary.
Yeah, especially with the pop. Scary.
Little legend.
And I think, so Drake and I, thinking of the last time I saw Hendry, I think, it was Drake and I were playing a Dom Catalano money ball, and it was Drake and I versus JW and Hendry, and I think in the final. And yeah, we snuck out a W there. But just thinking about Drake playing pickle, man. Especially like I think he had his hands on. I don't know what he's what's he playing with now. Paddle.
He got the. He's always gotten engages. He's
the engage.
The new pursuit. Yeah.
He can like especially when the paddle's got a little bit more gritty. He was just like, oh, this is almost like a tennis racket. Yeah. I can do whatever I want with the ball. And the guy is silly.
Yeah, we need to.
Yeah,
put
he was
that
like, I can
on.
Actually. Oh, dude.
Yeah. We need to put that match on ESPN Classic. Yeah.
But
get it up there.
Drake's the man. I agree. He's the talent's insane. I just remember he was down in Florida. I think it was me, him, Deckel, and Simone playing some practice games. And I think Deckel hit a put away. Drake was on the right, I think nearly at the kitchen line. And then the ball was all the way past him. And I'm talking like a put away. I'm not talking about like a roll that's going right. slow. And he was able to somehow dig it out from the midcourt, even though he was at the kitchen line. I'm just like, his hands are silly and his gets are silly. He's just a crazy raw athlete. So, man, anytime we get a, that's why I was like, December, I hear Drake and Roddy are playing a tournament. God, I would have gone to watch. I would just been a fan.
We got to set that up next year. We'll get a little mini pickleball going or something.
So Drake introduced you to pickleball. You were the volunteer assistant underneath him at UGA, which had to be pretty fun. So you come from a tennis background as well?
Yeah. I played Division III at Suwannee, University of the South, liberal arts college in Tennessee, not far from Nashville. Really, really enjoyed it. Was as successful as you could be in D3 and really glad I went that route. A lot of D3 guys actually in pickleball who are having success too. So had a blast in college and was getting tired of tennis, played a little bit after and was like, it just isn't as fun anymore. And thank God pickleball came along because now I'm as addicted as it gets. So yeah. Love the transition.
And I think with most tennis converts, and this is how I felt when I started pickleball, is like, oh, this is pretty similar to tennis, but I was the same way. I was burnt out on tennis. I knew that because I found pickleball at, I think it was 34, 35 maybe. And I was like, I'm never going to be as good at tennis, especially after having not played for like 10 years, than I was when I was like 22 or 23. So it's like, do I want to go play and just, for me, like I wouldn't be able to just go out and play tennis and have fun knowing that like I was declining in skill or talent.
Right.
With pickleball, it's like, okay, I can like, there's so many nuances and there's so many different aspects that I can keep improving on. And I feel like that even now that it was like, it was just a new challenge and like something that I knew that I could continue. Like it felt like potential, was pretty far out where I could see these like little incremental gains over time and still feel like I was improving. And to me, that's like, that's what's fun is like knowing that I'm not as, even now, I'm not as good as I could be.
Yeah. And very,
was it similar? Very, it was
100%. What I was going to say is it's like spot on. I think very few people actually enjoy the grind of tennis. Nobody wants to, I didn't want to go out and hit 5,000 backhands cross court, 5,000 down line. With pickleball, like I enjoy drilling. It's fun learning a new shot. It's fun learning how to hit a flip backhand. And then on top of that, I go out and I play with Jack, Colin, and Brooke every day, and our points are ludicrous. We're having a blast. So there's no sport where it's like I enjoy practicing and getting better. I enjoy playing with amateurs. I enjoy playing with my crew. Like it's a blast. Spot on.
And even on and you could probably talk more to this. Jack's kind of in your crew, but I played with him for the first time at in Dallas when he was there. I think for like just a golf exhibition. I was randomly there. And he was just like, yeah, it's just, it's fun having kind of like that beginner's mindset again, where you're literally like, there's excitement of going out and practicing and like learning stuff and getting better. And he was just like, I haven't been excited to drill or practice in forever.
Right. So yeah, same thing. I mean, he's in the same boat as us. He's like, I want to work on my two-handed roll dink today. We'll hit it. He'll pick it up like that and then it's on to the next. But super, he's loving it. I think that kind of getting the chance to learn something from scratch, kind of like what you're saying, with obviously having the awesome transfer and kind of crossover from tennis. So it's like the perfect storm for excitement.
Yeah. And I don't want you to speak for him, but is he in a mode where, you know, obviously he's made money and what's the motivation level for him right now? Is he having fun and just getting the results that he wants to get just playing week to week? Obviously he's a competitive person, but is the drive to the extent that he like really wants to be the number one player in the world? Or is it that he's just going to have fun and get as good as he can get?
Yeah, I think, you know, I don't want to speak for him, but just from kind of going out and practicing, like we're having an apps. I can't I can't stress enough how much fun the four of us are having, Brooke, me, Colin, and Jack. Right now, like to think about doing anything other than just us four enjoying the moment and going day by day and having a blast, I think is the goal and the focus. Obviously, he's competitive, and I think, you know, given it's 3 months into the year and he's making the semis and singles almost every tournament, and he's getting much better at mixed and, you know, takes Ben to three and they have a blast out there. I mean, whatever it is, like, the guy is enjoying the daily grind, and doesn't have, I think part of what's going to make him so successful is he doesn't have this pressure of, I need to be number one. I have to be the best. Like, I think he can get there by just kind of doing what we're doing and enjoying it day by day, but he's very much taking it a day at a time approach. So, yeah.
And what I appreciate about it is it's, you don't see this with many players, is it comes across as he's having very much like in a tournament setting, he's having very much like he's having a blast. It's a ton of fun. It's lighthearted. He's, you know, even in tight moments, he's still like, at the end of the day, it's still pickleball. And I'm able to play a sport competitively, even post test. And this is fun. So 100%. I think we need more of that, but it's a unique position, right? Because he's in a position where there's a lot less pressure, you know, in pickleball than for probably most people that don't have like the financial means that he's been able to earn in tennis, that kind of thing.
No, for sure. Yeah, nothing but respect for the grinders too. It's a tough position to be in when you're, you know, eating what you kill and stuff. So.
Yeah. What in terms of your life, I know you said you had a call at 10:30, so I'm assuming you have a day job. What's your situation within pickleball right now, and like what are your goals, aspirations, and what do you do to earn a living outside of pickleball right now?
So I call myself in the camp, and there's some, you know, I think we're an underspoken group out there, or minority even. I work full-time, but I call myself a full-time part-time pickleball player, in the sense that, you know, I work at Bank of America. Lucky to be with a company that's super appreciative of having employees with lives outside of work. The work-life balance of this company is phenomenal. It's enabled me to play, I'll do 20 to 25 tournaments this year, both PPA and ideally MLP if I get drafted, hopefully. So having that flexibility and having that balance, I really enjoy it. I don't think I would burn out necessarily if I was playing pickleball full time, but I would want to kind of explore the other facets of the industry, whether it be getting into the business side of things. I've been writing a good amount too on the side for the Dink and some other places. So for me, it's wake up before I was texting you. I was like, hey, I'm coming from drilling. I'll hit the courts at 7 a.m. sometimes, if not earlier in the summer, and get a couple hours in. Go to work. I'm going to go into the office later and got some meetings in the afternoon, and then try to play at night as well. So I'm loving it. I've always been a guy who wants to try to do as many things as possible and fill up the day. So pickleball is the perfect excuse to do that. But if there was a situation where I could do pickleball full time and kind of have the same lifestyle that I have right now that Bank of America has afforded me, I would do it without a doubt. So that's always a goal, but at the same time, I'm just taking it day by day and enjoying it. So,
And it sounds like you're dipping into the aspects outside of just playing with the writing and stuff. So, and I hear you on the mic doing commentary when you're at some of the tournaments as well, which is cool to see. So it feels like you're opening yourself up to those possibilities, but, you know, without the pressure of like having to find something, which is cool. And who knows, sometimes when you go all in on something, it becomes a little less fun. So that's, you know, having the ability to not have all your eggs in the pickleball basket. Also, it's not the worst thing in the world, especially since you're doing 2-a-days and writing and doing 20 to 25 tournaments, as well as having a full-time job. So just props. That's a grind, and it's cool.
Yeah. No, loving it. And, this was a big one for me too, is coming on here with you. So now I can officially retire whenever that day comes happy.
Yeah. This has got to be a monumental moment for you.
big time. No, big time. You're not wrong. You are not wrong.
So, guitar, what's going on with the guitar in the background?
So I am They call them campfire guitarists. I'm very much an intermediate. I wouldn't say I'm a beginner anymore. I'm a little better than that, but another free time. Maybe it's a slower day at work or just kind of something I'll do to take, you know, take my mind off pickleball or play, but trying to play a bunch. This is the greatest band out there right now. Another Drake Bernstein, fellow fan here. So yeah, big fan of Goose. I entered my jam band phase. I laugh like 10 years later than most people do when they're in college and stuff. So
yeah,
did
Bernstein get you into that?
So it's funny. We were in Wisconsin for National Indoors, and it was my birthday, and I was like, "Hey, my friends have told me about this band. You got to come with me." So technically, I was like, "Hey, we got to go see them." And like from the first show, we were hooked. And then we saw him in Athens, and I chased him around the country. So I take credit, but he's logged way more hours on Nugs and stuff like that. So he's listening hard.
Yeah. Yeah. And I know Drake's on the guitar too.
He's much better.
He liked learning.
Yeah. 100%.
But he always sends me some great, he'll just send me clips on YouTube of like people I need to watch or this video of John Mayer doing some silly stuff like off the cuff.
Yeah.
But big music guy.
Yeah.
All right. I think we have Greg Dowell. In the waiting room, which seems like a great treat.
What a treat.
This is like a, look at him, head down.
I know.
Is this what like, is he gonna make like a, yeah, is he gonna make an entrance? There he is.
Hey, what's up, boys? How are you doing?
Hey, what's up?
Dude, just.
Where's the pod?
This is the pod. Yeah. We're live. We're dude. Live. We're rolling. This is it.
Okay. What's up, Dakey?
What's going on? Yeah, good to see you. Good. Great journey down there.
Had a chance against J. Devin Dillon, but
I'm sorry.
For context,
I pulled the fire alarm. Yeah, that was me.
For context, Greg and Scarpa were playing JW and Dillon. They took the first game. Just wasn't even competitive. Greg Dow just being Greg Dow, 11-6, just complete domination. Backhand counters, ridiculous drops, incredible dinks. Didn't give Dillon any cross court dinks for Dillon to speed up at Scarpa. Kept middle dinks strong. Dink to JW. Knew they didn't have any weapons to attack you, Greg. And so 11-6, up 7-5, I think one or two, and then the rug gets pulled because somebody was trying to sabotage you and pulled the fire alarm at the Miami Beach Convention Center. It sounds like Abraham Dinkins snuck in to do it just to not let you get that W. And then it sounded like things fell apart from there, Greg. So I'll let you describe it.
No, yeah, that's exactly what happened. I mean, you know, nobody knew Dinkins' whereabouts at 11:48 p.m. on Saturday. So he's still a suspect. Gabe Tardio is a suspect. There are several suspects. So we're sifting through them with Ken Herman right now. Scarpa was insane. I mean, Scarpa did not miss a shot the whole first game, just dicing up people. Beating JW cross court, like without a doubt, beating JW cross court. So Scarpa was playing insane. I was playing well. And yeah, we were playing very good. They were playing okay. They didn't play that well the first game, and then they played. I thought they played pretty good the second game, up 7-5. We're playing really good, and yeah, dude, the fire alarm goes off. I mean, you know, you just can't make this stuff up. It is what it is. It's pickle. So it had gone off like a couple hours before, or maybe like an hour before, but for like 20 seconds. So and then it said it was it. It went off and then it was like, oh, it's a false alarm. And then it stopped. And then this one, so it was seven, we were up 7-5-2. And I believe they actually called a timeout. And then the fire alarm goes off within like 10 seconds of their timeout. It just kept going off. And then it would just run back and then it would say, oh, it's a false alarm. And then it would repeat again. So this was like probably a 12-minute break that happened. We're up 7-5-2. And it really didn't hurt us because I was still locked in and just like Scarpa was too. Like I truly didn't hurt us, but it helped them because they were in trouble. I mean, they were in trouble of really losing. And I think they needed that. And they, you know, they stepped up at the end. They really did. At that second game, man, they, we didn't collapse. I really, you know, there's been moments where everyone's collapsed in matches and lost it because of them. But that game, they're a better team and they played like the better team. So we lost that game. And then the third game, unfortunately, Scarpa cramped. So we lost, we played it out. We lost 11-0, but that was because we had a cramping issue. But no, it was a fun tournament, man. Miami's, you know, it's an interesting city. Not a place that, you know, Greg wants to really spend more than a weekend at, I'll be honest. It was fun.
Greg, as a fellow right side player, we haven't done the tip of the day yet, but I do want to do that. And I want your guys' input on thoughts on this. What I see a lot. So this is, Greg, just for context, this is basically for the amateur player at home that's going to go out and play this afternoon, what they can work on. And one thing that I see a ton in amateur play is if the point does get into a dink rally, the speed up is very telegraphed. Like, you know, it's coming because the swing's bigger. They go for a lot of pace on the speed up. And this happens even in pros where it's like, they're going for pace and not placement and disguise. And I would rank placement and disguise and even a slow ball as being a better speed up than a little bit of a bigger swing and more pace, even if it can get on them quicker. So I think one thing I would like people to go out and try today is the idea is that they don't know if you're going to hit a dink or if they're going to hit a speed up. So you want your speed up to look exactly like your dink. So not a bigger backswing. It's just instead of a bigger backswing, you just got to hit them in the right place, which, let's say it's you and I, Greg, we're both on the right side. We're doing forehand dinks cross court. You get a kind of a ball that's sitting a little bit on your forehand side. Where would you say the best place to speed up at the person on the left, right in front of you?
I mean, there's really three spots. So it's either you go from the right, you go just straight middle, off the bounce forehand, straight middle, or you go, assuming the guy on the left is a right side player, you go chicken wing, or you go down the line. So those are the three spots. I think the chicken wing works the most. Just that's the most common, but I think that works the most. Middle is a little more risky because if they're on it, they're on it. And then down the line, I think I'm using that a lot more because that one, dude, like if that guy on the left is not there, he's not in position. Like, people do not like to stretch out on a backhand and try and counter it, especially if they don't have a two-hander, which most people don't on the counter. So I like that spot too, but I think the classic chicken wing is still like the best option.
I agree. I think because that one also looks like if you're going cross court on a forehand roll, for example, to take that line, you're opening the paddle up a little more to the outside. Whereas then if you go chicken wing, the paddle's still kind of closed and then it looks like you're going cross court, but you could take a chicken wing. What are your thoughts, Roddy?
The whole time you guys are talking, I agree. The only thing is this is amateurs. This is a message and a motto, like make amateurs dink again. I swear these people are speeding up. They're speeding up every single ball. They're driving instead of dropping. I get it. The paddle technology is better, and we now have more shots at our disposal. But if you're an amateur and you can hit 2 to 3 good dinks in a row, you're going to get everything you want, and then you hit the spots you guys are talking about, and you win the point. I'm so tired of going to the park, and I'm sitting here working on resets until I can't breathe, and I look over, and Sharon's hitting a ball 400 miles per hour at Debbie, and then they're fighting. It's like, just let's make amateurs dink again. That's all I'm saying. But you guys are
so fine. Yeah, there's two sides to this. Love though. That. So like this was Greg's tip a little while back when he joined. It was five dinks. Just five dinks. A lot of good things happen, they'll miss. But the issue is, depending on the level, and I think that's great at like if we're talking at 4.5 plus level, maybe even 4.0. But I think the issue is, especially at that 4.0 level, is you don't really get into dink rallies that much, right? Because it's drive, volley, they're driving again. And even if you get into a dink, it's like a couple dinks and that's it. And then somebody's speeding up. So it's I think one to kind of stop that from happening. It's like how you handle bangers, right? You call, you know, bangers, pushers. Bangers, you just have to be able to volley well. So mm-hmm. if that's the case and you're not able to get into dink rallies and somebody's just ripping and winning against you, learn how to stand at the kitchen line, not be scared, and just meet the ball out in front and just volley, volley, volley. But absolutely right, Eric. I think that's a good point. And I think with it goes along with Dal's point of just five dinks. Greg and I and Marlon had a lovely dinner last night, you know, surprisingly enough. Greg was driving back up from Miami. Whoa. Stopped in Jacksonville, had a lovely dinner at Cooper Hawk Winery or something.
Wow.
Yeah, it was just a lovely evening.
Wow.
Greg, what'd you order? Yes.
You go steak?
No, I didn't have a steak. I had like a nice double cheeseburger with some, you know, I'm on vacation. So, you know, I've been on a little bit of a diet. Some people have noticed.
It's a lifestyle, Greg.
You do look good.
Drinking hasn't said anything, but.
No, you, what's hard, you, all I can see is a 2-inch thumbnail. So.
But I'm on vacation. So when I'm on at these tournaments, I'm not going to deprive myself, right? I was still on vacation yesterday, so I was able to have a double cheeseburger, but that's not a normal thing anymore, you know, because I'm trying to keep it reasonable here. So, you know, be as fit as possible.
I did hear a rumor, Greg, and I may have been the one that started it, that you were a vegetarian now, which I feel like is so on.
It's actually the opposite of what's, yeah, that's now,
carnivore
remember.
Diet. Okay, good.
Yeah. Actually, basically doing like the carnivore and fruit diet. I have some chuck eye steaks de-thawing in the fridge right now as we speak. And then some, like, I eat weird. Yeah, I mean, like, weird shit. I'll eat like a pound of chuck eye steak and then like a pear and a grapefruit. Like, it's, I love it. But it's like, those are my favorite things. Like steak, and I've always loved fruit. So it's like, I'm just kind of living the dream, and then throwing Chipotle occasionally. But yeah, down about 15 pounds in the last like 3 months.
Well, so. Dude, he's at like 190. When he walked in, I was like, is that Roscoe Bellamy?
Let's go. No. This is the start of the singles career.
I'm like 192, 193. I was probably, 205.
192 pre-dump.
Yes, right. So when I'm weighing myself like first thing in the morning, I haven't eaten since 6 o'clock the night before, no water, I pee. When I say I'm 192, that's after all that stuff. So when other people weigh themselves, they weigh at the gym at 3 o'clock with their shoes on and they're 197, you know what I mean? So I'm, you know, I'm probably walking around at 3 o'clock at 195. Right.
Yeah.
But I'm sure 192, nice. But yeah, I'm feeling better. I'm feeling better, and you know, just trying to be fit, man. Trying to be reasonable.
Congrats.
That's it.
Seriously, congrats.
I mean, it's still not great. No, let's be clear.
Dude, that is substantial. That is substantial.
It's we're improving. We're you know.
No, Greg, it's not improving. Like it's
that's substantial.
Yeah. It's substantial. I think you said another 15 pounds last night. Molly and I talked about this. Low. That's 175 would be insane for your height. Don't do it.
You don't have another 50 yet. No more 15.
No, you don't have another 15.
Dude, I'm in
Mullen's,
a weird.
Mullen says no shot right now. Yeah, no shot.
I'm not like anorexic, but I'm like addicted to the process. You know what I mean?
But let's do some muscle. Weird, right? What do you think about that? Some muscle versus just.
I'm lifting too. Dude, he's I noticed the same thing, and I'll tell you what, you know, I don't want to like talk about, you know, say like, oh, Jay, but you know, just playing Dylan and J-Dub, I know they're different players, but and that was one match. I haven't played them in like, I've never played them. So, but I'll tell you what, our strategy was not to hit was to keep the ball away from Dylan at the kitchen line. Like that was our strategy. So I think, and then, you know, Dylan wins mixed in that APP. Like, I don't know, man, Dylan Frazier, he's playing really well. I'm not going to say he's better than J-Dub and or whatever, but he's very, very good. So, and it's an interesting, like if you watch Dylan and J-Dub play other matches, a lot of times teams will do the same thing and keep it away from Dylan. You know, Dylan's forehand speed up off the bounce at the kitchen is one of the best from the right, probably the best. So it was interesting playing them because you think, you know, J-Dub on the left, but I don't know. What do you guys think? You think Dylan and Dylan has overtaken? I mean, where's J-Dub right now? Is he, I feel like he was number two for a while, but now I feel like there's Dice Q in the mix and there's, you guys got any thoughts on that? I don't know.
Rob?
Well, just talking about their partnership, I think they're limited. I mean, they're going to beat almost any team out there other than the Johns, right? And that's purely because they're so consistent. They have great hands if they get attacked. But I think the issue is they are just a worse version of the Johns. So if, you know, they're going to beat most teams, but I think where they lack in terms of upside is the fact that they are limited to playing on the left and playing on the right. I think this is just my hot take, my opinion. I don't think doing a full stack an entire match is the most optimal strategy, in my opinion. I think teams that are very strong on both sides, that, you know, if you have a player that can play the right well, as well as play the left and vice versa, I think that's a stronger team because your opponents, especially like J-Dub and Dylan or the Johns, they want the same pattern, right? If you give them different looks, they have more to think about. They can't just stick to the same pattern over and over. They have to worry about different spots. And I think, you know, even if it was like J-Dub and Dylan, let's say not unwinding the stack, let's say Dylan was returning from the left side, even if they just stayed for those points, it would at least give your opponent a different look. And I think that's where they're limited. But I agree, Greg. I think Dylan is, I mean, obviously by just his results in mixed with Tyra, like he played, it was basically truly singles with a backup from the left. He was all over the place and very athletic, very quick hands and strong on both sides, which you can't, you know, I would say Dylan's equally strong on both sides. I wouldn't say the same with J-Dub.
Yeah. Yep. It's just interesting, like, how he, you know, how it's just like, you think, I mean, I don't know. It's one match. And again, I literally have not played either of these guys in a tournament in like a year and a half, 2 years. So it's one match. It's a very small sample size for me, but, yeah, just really interesting. Like, I feel like people don't talk about him. I know he's like known as an underrated player, but I still think he's underrated. Like, he's got to be up there with like.
Is J-Dub holding Dylan back?
Who else would he play? But no, I mean, I don't think. I still think it's very close, but
no, I do too.
I don't know who else he would play with. Maybe like, you know, him and like a Ignatowicz or something. I don't know. I think J-Dub's still a really good partner for him.
I agree. The steadiness.
I've
watched the past couple of tournaments, the PPA as well as the APP. The PPA, I don't remember which match it was, but it might have even been against Iescu Tardio. But I just remember J-Dub. It's the worst I've seen him play in a while. But I think, you know, this is pickleball. We all go through lulls of like playing well, playing not as well. I don't think it means a whole lot, you know, because like you said, Greg, it's a pretty small sample. And look, their results speak for themselves over the last year.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. They still crushed and they had an off match against us and they crushed they crushed everyone else. No one else got more than like 5 points in a game.
Three and three in the final against DeHart and Howells. Big shout out to DeHart and Howells. That's a good result for especially Ryler. Good to see him in Championship Sunday getting a silver. All right, so some other fun results in the Miami event. God, look at you, just musician jam band guys. So we had Eric Lang, who's now playing in some APP events, which is fun. He played with Purple Jesus, who very impressive legend, but has been playing for a while apparently. And I didn't realize this, but I played him in Daytona in last February, but don't quite remember it. But he and Eric beat Daisuke and Tardio 9 and 7. Like I didn't see it, but what I did hear about the match is that Andre and Tardio were pulling triggers pretty early, trying to be pretty aggressive, and both those guys they're probably just trying to test Purple Jesus's hands, and Purple Jesus said no sir. And Eric's got obviously a great backhand counter on the right, really good hands. What I found interesting is, you know, Purple Jesus is a solid 5'8" playing the left, which is, you know, you have Eric, who's a huge guy, playing the right. So just again, kind of a unique style and matchup, and it worked against, you know, the one seed who was probably favored to get to the final against J-Dub and Dill. Thoughts on that result, boys?
Yeah, Greg, you remember APP Alabama 2021 in the fall? Yeah. Purple Jesus went on a tear. He walked on water. He avoids the kitchen. The guy is unbelievable. He doesn't miss, Rob. And I've only ever seen him play singles. He's obviously arrived in doubles too, and is a Pacific Northwest boy up there with Lang, and I think Lanier's up there. This guy, Greg can speak to it. I've never seen somebody glide. He's like Federer out there. He glides, he doesn't touch the ground, and he doesn't miss. The guy's a freak, and he moves forward. And he's got long, he literally is Jesus. He's the pickleball Jesus.
Yes.
So he really is.
He's literally Jesus.
Yeah. He'll take a nothing dink and turn it into wine, and you're just like, I mean, the guy's good.
It's unbelievable. I remember that day. It was like, it was a Sunday, singles day on Sunday at the APP. I think it was 20, I think it was a year, was it a year and a half ago?
Yeah.
I think
that's 20, maybe 2022.
Maybe it was 2021, 2022. Yeah. Yeah. And yeah, man, this guy just comes out of nowhere. He's beating everybody. And like, yeah, he's just got this, he's got this thing. If you talk to him, and me, Dinkin and Scarpa were like, or Dobrin were just following around, just cheering for him. I mean, it was just,
we were
unbelievable. Yeah. Great guy. Interesting cat. I mean, he should get on a pod soon. Like, he's an interesting guy. Like, he's like, you know, I think he was in Indonesia or something for a long time, and he's, you know, he's got this interesting look. He's like a professor or associate professor or something. So it's very interesting, you know, classic pickle character. Just who is this guy? Names himself Purple Jesus. So yeah, I really didn't see much of him play, but yeah, dude, listen, I don't care how bad Tardio and Daisuke played or how dumb their shots were, whatever, like, to beat them, it doesn't matter how bad they play. To beat them is really impressive regardless. So shout out PJ, bro. I mean, the guy can play. I mean, it's unbelievable. These guys, you know, he came out of nowhere. I guess he's been playing, I don't know if he's been playing more or whatever, but he's absolute legend, absolute beast.
And he's always been around, Greg. Like he'll pop up, right, once or twice a year. But that's what's
– yeah.
It's another one of these myths in pickleball. Like, you see that name in the draw. I remember he beat Schick the tournament before Daytona Beach when Schick went on his run and made the final. Purple Jesus beats him in qualies. And Schick's like, I'm never going to make it in this sport. And I'm like, no, you just lost to one of the best singles players ever to grace us. Like, so this guy pops up once every couple years, and then if I see him in the draw, I'm literally going to be cowering, but then I'm also going to be it's going to be awesome to share the court with Jesus. And then the last thing, yes, I'll say is I follow him on Instagram. He is the most interesting guy. Half his photos are like him with sweet potatoes and like growing stuff in his garden, and then there might be like one pickleball thing in there. But the guy's just like, you know, he's going to play when he wants to play, and when he does, he's going to dominate. He's so good. So, can't say enough.
Does PGA get drafted?
Cool.
MLB?
Who knows if he even applied? Exactly. If he applied, do you think?
Yeah.
Great. I mean,
he's got a real life to live, Greg. He's growing stuff in the garden. He's traveling. He's in the Peace Corps. He's solving different things in the Middle East. He's busy.
I will personally.
You know what he said to me? Now I remember. I'm actually remembering it a little better. It's pretty funny. On that Sunday, on that APP, I was just coming to watch singles because I had played Saturday. And I don't know Purple Jesus. And he comes up to me in the morning, this guy who looks, you know, he's got an interesting look. He had, you know, these baggy, like basketball shorts, like way below the knee. You know, he's 5'8". He's not. He's like 5'6". He's got this, you know, kind of a strange look, honestly. He comes up to me. I don't know who this dude is. And he goes, "Hey, man, do you want to warm up? Can you help me warm up or something? I saw you play yesterday." And I'm like, "No, I'm good." And I'm like, I'm a little bit afraid. Like, he's going to, like, pickpocket me or something. Like, he, you know, he looks like some sort of, like, you know, he's trying to sell me, like, some towel, you know, something weird. But, and then I see him, and then an hour later, I see him play, and I'm like, holy, like, this guy's, I feel bad. Like, it wasn't mean, but, and then I came up to him. I was like, "Hey, man, I'm sorry. Like, sorry, I didn't warm up with you. I just, you know, I mean, look at you. It's a little bit strange situation for Greg." And he said, you know what he said? He said, "No, it's all good." I said, "Thanks, man." And he said, "Hey, cheers, man." He said, "Cheers." Like, nobody says cheers. He's like, "Yeah, you know, like British people, like, hey, cheers, man." He said that. And I was like, "Cheers." Like, that's it. I haven't heard someone say that ever, I don't think. I was like, this guy's got something. And that's when I just started, I grabbed Dinkin, I grabbed Dobrin. I was like, we just got to follow this guy. I mean, this is, we follow Jesus, right? That's what it is.
We literally
and
became.
We just follow around. He's like, "Cheers, yeah, man." I'm like, you're so awesome.
He became a
disciple.
But he's one of those guys too that's like, I don't care how weird you are. If you're a nice dude and you're easy to talk to, and you know you're not going to be hooking people left and right out there, you're a winner in my book. And that's that guy. He's a great guy. The little bit I know him.
Yes.
Yeah.
One of my favorite parts about just watching him and Lang play is that when they were returning, let's say they're serving to Lang, and Purple Jesus is playing the left. Purple Jesus is like, "I'm not going to stand in the kitchen line. I'm going to stand back here with my man Lang. And as Lang returns, I'm going to come to the kitchen with him because we're a team. We're going to move together."
Love it. Kamikaze returns.
Were they doing that?
Did you see that? Yeah. When Lang was returning, Purple Jesus was not standing at the kitchen line. He was standing at the back. They're going two back on the return, and Purple Jesus just comes up with him.
Wow. I've never seen that before.
Purple Jesus.
Purple Jesus could get on Lang's back and then fly off and hit the volley. Like, they could do. He's capable. He could do that kind of stuff. That guy's flying around. He's a spider monkey right there. He's electric.
He is really quick. His quickness was unbelievable too. He's so quick.
Yeah.
Yeah. Total legend.
We gotta get shirts. We gotta get shirts, Greg.
PJ shirts, dude. 100%.
Just to finish up on this quick Miami recap, then we're going to have Mullen come in for some trending up or down for you fellas. We had a Hunter Johnson and Grayson Golden singles final that Hunter took, but Grayson Golden got the silver medal. He was wearing a Bitcoin shirt. Greg, I know you heard some, you saw some stuff. I mean, you know, Grayson has not really been in, this might be his first championship Sunday, I would say, but had a great run in singles. And I know you saw some of the interactions and saw him play. So give us some background on Grayson Golden.
Well, he's under the same management company that I'm under, Top Notch Management. Shout out Flaxman. And so I had a dinner with him at the last tournament that I was at, a Top Notch dinner. And guys, quite the character. Kind of similar to he's kind of similar to me, where he's a little bit, you know, over the top, obnoxious, but hopefully in a likable way at sometimes. but quite the character, definitely a loud guy, like, and good guy. I liked him. And then I heard, you know, I'd heard he's definitely very fiery on the court from what I've been hearing. And I guess there was a doubles match in the back draw with him and his partner against Jack Foster and Jason McNulty. And apparently things got really bad, where they are just, you know, Foster and what's his name again?
Golden.
Grayson. What's his name again? Sorry. Grayson Golden. Yeah, sorry. Foster and Golden. Sorry, Jay. Sorry, Grayson. The Addy 7 or the, you know, whatever. They apparently was really bad. Like, just, I mean, full screaming at each other, top of the lungs, like other courts had to stop playing. You know, there were some threats apparently made.
Like what?
You know, I'm not at liberty to say exactly what I heard, but there were some threats, and it was about as ugly as it gets. Even Jason McNulty, who's like the greatest guy, nice guy, wouldn't get in a fight with anybody. He was part of this too. Like, started, you know, going crazy as well. So things got really, really ugly, but I think that's cool, man. I mean, you know, Grayson told me, he said, I asked him about it, and he's like, yeah, man, I'm just talking shit, and these guys are just, you know, they take it so personally and blah, blah, blah. So that's his side. And Foster told me something different. So it's always good to have, you know, stuff like that going on. You know, we've talked about it where it's, you know, it's fun to have people going at each other. And even if it's a little over the top and it's a little crazy, like, I think that's good for the sport. So the guy's definitely a wild character and a dude to look out for sure. But Bitcoin shirt. I don't know Bitcoin. Exactly what the, you know, there's a QR code on the back. I don't know exactly what, are we supposed to scan the QR code and give him Bitcoin? Are we?
Yeah. So Greg, I actually did this. I just to see if it works. So I paused my TV when I was watching his match. When his back was turned, it was the QR code. I scanned it with my phone. It, like, his Bitcoin address popped up. And then I sent him like a small amount just to see if it would work, and just said, "Well done, Grayson."
Wow. Honestly, so it's just his wallet. Okay, gotcha.
It's just his Bitcoin address, and then you just,
yeah,
it's fantastic. And apparently he's sponsored by a guy named Bitcoin Ben, who I don't know who this is, but he commented on the tweet that I put out. So,
it's legit. Only in pickleball can you have a guy with a QR code on his back of his shirt sharing the court with Purple Jesus, who will disappear for the next 11 months and then come out in the wild. It's the greatest sport. It's the greatest sport of all time. Those two are sharing the court together. Polar opposites.
So good. Okay, going to finish up today's pod with trending up or down with Mollen.
Hey, guys. How's it going?
Hey, good.
Hey, Mollen.
Glad
to be here.
I know this isn't pickleball related, but I wanted to talk about Shohei Ohtani
a
little bit. And by absolutely. I wanted to talk about it, I meant I want to hear what you guys have to say. Is it Pete Rose again, or is he innocent?
I think what happens in pro sports, and granted, Greg, you may be more informed than me. I think what happens is you get these people, like, I remember when Laramie Tunsil was drafted a while ago, right before they released the gas mask video, ended up being a close family member who was sabotaging him and wanting to get money. I think what happens is you have these icons and these guys making ludicrous amounts of money, and people can't help it. Their moral codes go, and they end up sabotaging them just to either get a little bit of the spotlight or get a little bit of the money. I like to think the guy's innocent. I just went to Japan in December. Everyone there raves about him. He's more popular there than anybody. He's a god there. This is, obviously, I'm so uninformed, but I would like to think he's innocent. Someone's trying to take advantage of him. That's what I hope, at least, Greg.
I don't have much to add there, man. I mean, I think so too. I mean, it sounds like it's his, what is it, like his trainer or his whatever, one of his guys in his inner circle is doing something. So, I mean, you know, what we learned from PJ is like, you can't be quick to judge, you know, and have forgiveness. And so I don't think, yeah, I mean, I really don't know. He seems like, yeah, a great guy, whatever. I doubt it's a Pete Rose situation where Otani is, you know, betting on his games, even if he's betting for his team to win or whatever. So we'll see what happens with it. But, it's definitely an interesting story. I mean, we'll see if that happens in pickleball too. That would be quite interesting. I don't know. Apparently there's no gambling lines anymore because the odds makers cannot figure out how to properly make the lines.
Got Purple Jesus at plus 40,000 and he's winning 2-2. It doesn't really work out. Yeah.
All I'll say with the Otani situation is the only thing that gives me pause is that a sports journalist that I respect that I think does a good job, Keith Olbermann, put out, I think, a tweet that said, we've got the next Pete Rose situation, which makes me think he knows something that maybe the rest of us don't. But if it was found that he was betting on baseball, even if it's a dollar, right, it's like it is that situation. So hopefully that's not the case. But I think Shohei Ohtani is trending down.
Really? Mike McDaniel trending up or down?
All right. Look, I'll try to keep this simple. He trending up as a motivator, a head coach. There's no doubt he's trending up. He took what he's done with Tua, whether you're a Tua fan or not, he made Tua a very top 10, top 15 quarterback, which has proven to be enough to win in the league. Where he struggles and where I have issues with him is he's very stubborn, and I think he knows how good of a play caller and how smart he is offensively as an offensive mind. And it's 3rd and 1 and we're in shotgun and we throw a 15-yard pass and we have multiple running backs where you give them the ball, they're going to get a yard by diving for it. That's the thing. I think he's learning. We know that's one of the hardest jobs in America is being a head coach. There's only 32 positions. We're going to say trending up slightly. We've made the playoffs his first 2 years. We just can't get over the hump. We're a cursed team. I've never been more upset to be a fan of a team in my life. They literally have taken 10 years off my life. But if you told me tomorrow I could go to the stadium and kiss the grass, I'm buying a flight tonight. There's nobody in the world who's more of a diehard for their team than me. I got the hat on. You can't see my room. There's dolphin stuff everywhere. I'm a child. Mike McDaniel trending up.
Great question. I like that. So one thing that – so Mal and I watched the Hard Knocks with the Dolphins, and one of the things we find hilarious, it's like we joke about this a lot, and – It was when Tua like met like with the groundskeepers, and then he comes back into like the quarterback room and he's like, guys, like I was just out there with like the people working. He's like, they think they're like a part of the team. Like they think they're like a part of the organization. It's like they think they're like one of us. It's strange to see how much they care. They're like they think they're
dolphins.
They think they're dolphins. So we always laugh and joke about this. Like they think they're like a part
of this. Not his best moment. He's a wholesome guy. I think he meant they're counting the wins.
I know. I just found it hilarious.
No, you're right. Huge to it.
Yeah.
Sorry.
So Greg, that one wasn't for you, but next one. Oh, do we have more or no?
Also for Greg.
Oh, Greg.
I like McDaniel. No. Yeah, I like McDaniel. Training up. I like him. Good guy.
Let's go.
Just wanted to ask you guys about referees. I mean, you probably have your own opinions from whether or not they've involved themselves in your matches, and pickleball, but also, when it comes to the March Madness stuff, I mean, these games are like, you see the LSU, whatever, who cares? But either doing like prison rules for one team and then calling no foul, it's like one or the other, but you don't have somebody, there's never like a fair fight. So what are your guys's thoughts on, it's not necessarily trending up or down, but just with referees, either you're all in and you're going to call everything or no
Greg,
rules.
I got a strong opinion. You go first or I can go first.
Yeah, you go first. You go first.
This is a huge issue with the tournament. And the main issue for me, March Madness right now, is the end of the game. The last minute can take up to an hour. It's absolutely ludicrous how many reviews we're doing and how long it's taking. I don't mind reviewing stuff since it's important and determines the outcome. But these refs go over there and they fall asleep at the screen or they don't know what they're watching. NFL, college basketball, March Madness, we need somebody in New York whose sole job is to review the play in real time and wire in the call. It's 2024. We got people driving with Apple headphone glasses on, and I've got a 75-year-old man looking at a screen going like this. What are we doing here, right? And in pickleball, I love the refs. Stop looking at my feet. I'm not in the kitchen, and watch the ball on the line. Like, we got to fix that too. That's my 2 cents, Greg.
Yeah, totally agree with the replay stuff. I mean, I think a lot of these basketball refs, I always struggle, like, especially in the NBA and college too. There's too many fouls and there's too many free throws being shot. I think it's almost like if it's borderline, if a ref thinks that there may be a foul, then they're going to call it versus it should be, hey, unless I see contact with someone's hand when they're going up for a shot or their arm or whatever, then I'll call a foul. But I'm not sure, then we just let them play. And I feel like it's the opposite. It's, well, I'm not sure. It looked like a foul. We're going to call it. Too many free throws. Free throws aren't exciting unless it's the end of the game. So I think there's too many fouls being called overall. Especially like on the defense, like if anybody goes in the lane and just goes up for a shot and it's not a clean block, it just seems to always be a foul. So that's annoying. And I think, you know, pickleball refs do a pretty good job. Again, the line calls are tough when you have one ref on the court. So we got to at some point figure that out. Cause you know, like we talk about, like the money is there at this point. And these matches aren't just a joke. So, you know, if there are some people and there's been some situations where people are making bad calls, it doesn't happen as much as you'd think. Honestly, I think most people do a pretty good job. It's gotten better. I think, yeah, most people do a good job, but it still happens. And especially in the side courts, right? So I don't know what the solution is there, but you know, even take it back to gambling and stuff. Like if you're gambling on pickleball and you're watching a match and there's one dude who's clearly like cheating on a couple calls and there's no, and you know, the ref doesn't have the angle and there's no replay on that court. I mean, that's not going to bode well for the betting public when stuff like that is out there. So we'll see if there's a solution at some point, but doesn't seem to be the focus right now. Can I throw one out there? I want to hear. I'm interested what you guys think about this. Is that okay?
Of course.
Okay. What do you guys think about this? I know it's been talked about, but this whole glasses thing or goggles or the eyewear or whatever. What do you guys think of that? Whoever wants to start.
You two take it.
I can't tell if it's because, is it a stand? I mean, I'll start. I'm wearing the glasses here. These are prescription, though, to be very clear. I can't see. I could never wear glasses or sunglasses when I played tennis or any sports. Just the fog didn't work in the Midwest. I don't know. I can't tell if it's because people are genuinely concerned about eye protection or if it's sort of some people, I'm not sure who, taking a stand against like maybe hot paddles. And I don't know. I think there's probably a little bit of both. People are, I mean, it's that can really injure you. So I don't know. I guess I'm sort of undecided on, depending on the reasons, right? If you're doing it just for, I don't know. I'm undecided.
Yeah.
Okay.
Yeah. I've had some scares. Here's my quick take. It's like the paddles are hot now. And there are situations in context. If I play indoors up here in Charlotte, we have a net indoors that is, the ball flies off the net. So not only are you indoors, not only is it a hot paddle that's already probably too strong, Then if it hits the net, I don't care how fast you are or good you are, you could take one to the eye. So there, I think there are situations mm-hmm. where it's warranted. Normally, if I play outside, I'm playing in sunglasses or, you know, the ball is at least a little bit slower. There, and the other scary thing that you can't be ready for is if it shanks off your partner's paddle, there's no getting ready for that. You could definitely be harmed. Do I think the glasses out there are the best that they can be? No, but it's new. And I think eventually we either need to temper these paddles down a little bit or we need to pivot to eyewear. Some of the you know, the goats are now wearing eyewear pretty regularly. So anyway, mm-hmm. it's scary.
It's true.
Interesting.
Greg, what do you think?
No, yeah, I think that's a good point from Dinkin. It's like, what, like, if there's a discussion about whether the paddles are too hot, I think your answer is yes, because now people are starting to wear eyewear. I think that's probably a pretty good indicator that they're too hot. So I think that's a good point. And then, yeah, no, I just thought it's just weird. Like a couple months ago, this just started showing up just kind of out of nowhere. It's like an industry. It seemed to me a little bit fishy, like kind of like an industry plant. Like somebody's coming out with a, you know, so one of these companies is coming out with the goggles and they're like, hey, push this. So everybody thinks they need to wear goggles. I've never been close to, I've never had once, you know, knock on wood, I've never had one scare with any of that. I've never even been hit in the face. Honestly, maybe I just gotten lucky, but I just felt like
you are so out front. There's no chance, dude. You are so out front. Yeah.
Way too far out front.
I just like, I don't know. It just seemed to pop up out of nowhere a couple months ago. I guess it's not out of nowhere. The paddles are hotter, but people want to wear glasses. That's great. That's fine. Better safe than sorry. But I found it interesting that it seemed to come out of nowhere, but yeah, I think it's a sign that the paddles are too hot. And obviously people have lost.
Yeah. And remember that match, Desert Ridge, Tyson and Dekel versus Lang and Navratil. It turned into a body bag. Who could hit them? That match, I'm putting glasses on in that match. Like that's kind of scary.
Yeah.
And again, maybe it's the paddles, but that was the one match in my head where I'm like, I would have worn glasses in that match. But yeah.
Yeah,
anyway,
true.
You're right though.
True.
But it feels like Greg thinks this is like a big pharma type deal, you know, like it's a conspiracy by the eyewear companies to get glasses on every pickleball player in the world. And honestly, that's not a bad play if I'm an eyewear company.
I'm not blaming them, but did it not seem to kind of come out of nowhere within the last 3 months a little bit? I know people have worn.
Yeah,
I mean, people have worn glasses before. It's not totally new, but like, it's almost like a given now that people wear glasses. And I'm like, no one, what do we, I don't know, man. There's something, yeah, there's some, you know, big pickle, whatever you want to call it. Somebody's coming out with some glasses. Let's just say that.
Coming soon by somebody.
Yes. And that's fine. Yeah. If you want to wear it, it's fine. I'm not going to wear glasses.
Yeah, I've never really had, I've never really had any scares in terms of the eye stuff or even getting hit in the head or anything like that. The friendly fire, I agree with Eric. I think the friendly fire off the partner's paddle, ricocheting, mm-hmm. stuff like that, tight nets, maybe stuff like that. But I think generally speaking, it's never really been even a thought to me of like, I need to protect my eyes. Greg, you feel the same, huh?
Yeah, but then I think like if I did have a
elite hands, right? Elite hands, it doesn't matter.
It's not that, but it's you know, but no, I mean if people want to wear glasses, that's great. I just found it strange. I saw that it just popped up like this. I'm like, I don't know.
No,
something going on. It'll come out at some point.
The only time I've ever actually been like, oh whoa, was when it was like I was warming up in a mixed doubles match. It was, I think I was playing with maybe Fudge, and it was, this was like in Sacramento last year, and it was Dave Carvalho and Tyra Black. And Dave in warm up was playing with a D-Lam, and he hit some drives that I was just like, I didn't see the ball. Literally, I didn't see the ball. I was like, I don't know where that drive went. And it went like, I think it went an inch over the net and hit the back fence. because the paddle was so hot. If the paddles are hot like that, like D-Lam hot or like foam core hot, yes.
Forget it.
But I think even the level the paddles are at now, it's I mean, they're hot, but to me, it's not at a speed where it's like, this is out of control. But on that note, what do you guys think in terms of kind of where technology should go? Do you think it should dial back a little bit from where it's at now? Do you think it's too hot? Do you think what's the level it should go to?
It depends on where you want pickleball to go. If it's proven and tested in the market that viewers want the sport to be faster and more hands battles and more speeding up, then I think there's still probably a little bit of room. I think there's going to reach a point, though, where we're already starting to see some shots disappear, especially in some situational kind of context. Like, I just feel like we're getting to where the third shot drop is still obviously a shot, but it's becoming less and less key. I think you can get away with driving the third, knowing that you're going to be able to hit it hard enough to get a fifth that you can drop. Just that kind of stuff. And that evolution is normal in any sport, right? But I think pickleball needs to decide what it wants to be in 5 and 6 years. Obviously, I love to dink. It's in my last name. But at the same time, there comes a point, I think, where it's like, all right, what are we doing anymore? Are we losing too much of the skill asset part of the sport? And it's just going to become who can hit bigger and then, you know, crash. But it's, Dow, I'm interested to hear your thoughts because I'm kind of torn.
No, I'm with you. I'm not torn at all. Some of these paddles are way too hot. Like, it's insane. Especially, you know, like when you're playing people who are using these, there are a couple that are super, super hot. And, you know, it makes a huge difference in someone's level, especially now that people are a lot closer in level and the margins are slim. If somebody has a paddle that is that much hotter than yours, that much better than yours, you still have to control hot paddle. So it's not all, you know, it can be super hot and actually be a bad thing for your game. But once you get used to a super hot paddle, it's going to be good for your game. So if somebody has a paddle that's, you know, 20% better than yours, it's a big deal. It's a big difference, you know, when you're playing against that person. So I think it's definitely a huge advantage to have those. And I think it's dumb. I mean, I think it's dumb. I think, you know, people have said this before, if you want to continue to increase technology, whatever, and have them really spinny, more spin, I think that's a much better route than just strictly power. Cause I think the spin, you know, you get more of these angles and you get more of these cool speed ups and the hands battles last longer. Yeah. But then, you know, with these rocket paddles, it's like, if you touch, there's a, you know, two or three paddles, we all know what they are. And if you speed up to that paddle and that person just puts
paddle on,
is trying to counter and they just put the paddle on the ball. Yeah. The point is over. It's over. So that is unfair. It's no shit. It's, you know, if I was a paddle company, I would continue to do that and make them as hot as possible until somebody tells me I can't do it. But so it's not their fault. But I do think it's gotten out of hand with a couple different paddles. So, you know, we'll see if that's dealt with at all. I've heard it's not going to be dealt with until next year. But yeah, I mean, we'll see what happens. I do think they are too hot. Yes. A
it
few
is
of
not
them.
Fair. That's a good way to put it.
What do you think?
No, I think that's interesting what Roddy said about, you know, pickleball's got to decide what it wants to be. Is it the slower game? And that goes down to, like, what was it? Steve Kuhn, the shot clock thing or whatever, like during the point.
Yeah. I don't know if you guys have heard some of the rumblings of that. And I find it very interesting. It's like, cool. It would be tough. It'd be tough for like amateurs, right? You're not gonna have a shot clock, at a rec game per se.
Yeah.
But like, if there is like a 25 second shot clock as from the time the point starts where you have to finish the point, something like that would be interesting because it'd be shorter points.
Yeah.
But that was kind of the context of that.
Yeah, and just like if that's something they move towards, or it's just about what pickleball. Yeah, is it going to be hands battles or is it these long dink rallies? But it's got to figure
and
it
better
out.
Better athletes too.
You know, I think if
Athletes are entering the game, so the level's going to be raised anyway. Like we're it's not the same thing where you don't have people that can do impressive things with already decent paddles. But if you just make it about the speed and the power, mm-hmm. you're losing some of that athleticism. The spin's a great point by Greg. Athletes mm-hmm. can use the spin, and then they mm-hmm. can do both dinks and then drives and then new shots. I mean, like lobs were a thing until somebody can hit an overhead 400 miles per hour now. Like, I'm not going to lob. So, right.
Yeah.
Right. No, yeah, I agree. I was going to say, like, if you increase the spin more, I think that'll also shorten the points. Maybe not as much as the power paddles, but I think that'll shorten the points too. Cause like Dakin said, like there'll be cooler ways to end the point early where there's dipping drives and there's speed ups that are just, you know, crazy speed ups that can actually land in cause you can put more topspin mm-hmm. on the ball, you know, lobs, whatever. So I think if you increase the spin, it'll also shorten the points if that's what your goal is. And it'll be more exciting endings yes. to the points. Versus somebody just smacking a counter super hard because the paddle's not.
I agree, Greg. I think the Lux is a perfect example of the way I use it versus the way Jack Sock uses it, right? Like if everybody has hot paddles, Jack should be rewarded for having more power, a more lively arm. And I think right now with paddles, it's like you're getting rewarded regardless, right? So if there is like a baseline standard of like this, let's just call it the Lux, right? And like Jack's getting rewarded because he has more raw power than me, right? But it's not because of the paddle. It's because exactly. he has more raw power. I agree with Greg. I think that's a really, really, really interesting point of like get crazy with spin, because I also think that would actually bring out more athleticism. If you can hit a topspin lob from the baseline and somebody can run that down, you're going to have wild points. If you can dip it cross court, but the power's dialed way down to where it's the slower – it's a much slower paddle, but a lot spinnier. I think you're going to have really interesting points, especially in singles and doubles. And I like that direction would be really good. But I think we all agree that power's too much, and it's losing a lot of the athleticism and taking away from the sport because points are shorter.
Yep.
Well, I appreciate everybody jumping on impromptu. So thank you, Mon. Thank you, Abraham Dinkin. And thank you, Greg Olsdow.
Gregory, good to see you, Greg.
Thanks, guys. Yeah, appreciate it. This is we'll see you in a week here, Dinkin. And Rob, we'll see you shortly as well.
Thanks for having me.
Thank you for everything.
And we got to stay on. I think we got to stay on.
Yep. It feels right. Appreciate you guys. Till next time. Adios.
See ya.